This is Educating Technology, a podcast about using technology in our schools. Last week, we talked about how Verizon is looking at charging Remind spam fees to send text messages to students and parents. This week, Microsoft Office is finally in the Mac App Store with rumors of potentially changing the Office 365 subscription, plus some new ways to install tools on Windows. If you like what we're doing, you can support us by going to patreon.com/educatingtech and becoming a patron. Now, on with the show. So, let me tell you what I did this week. But before we do that, let's do a little bit of follow-up from last week. We ended the show by talking about how Verizon and Remind were going at it about some spam fees because Remind sends too many text messages. Well, it looks like Verizon's going to backpedal on that, and Remind's going to be just fine. So Verizon's like, we don't want to get in the way of students and parents getting the important communications from teachers and schools. So needless to say, Verizon changed their mind after some backlash from some educators, and so all is well in the world of Remind. So
cool.
Which Remind's a great app. I like it.
It is good. It's a great service.
When I was doing the UIL computer science team, I used Remind, and it was really handy because I could just fire off the text messages to those kids, and they didn't have to have my phone number, and I didn't have to have theirs. So,
well, I was much more cruel than that. I only sent them emails. I didn't even send them Google Classroom notifications. I made them check their email.
Oh, that's pretty rough, but and considering how we feel about email, that's sort of strange.
I know, but by golly, if I got to check mine, you got to check yours.
Man, I don't like email at all. I just, I don't like getting it. I don't like sending it. I guess we can talk about Google's answer to that later on in the show.
Is Wave back?
No, Wave's not back.
Oh.
But this is what I did this week. We got some new iPads for kindergarten, and I did put on Twitter that I made the statement that there was going to be a new iOS update soon because I'd set up new iPads. And it never fails that every time I set up new iPads, make sure they're all up to date, day or so later, there's an iOS update. Every time. I was just a couple days off this time. But an iOS update did come out after I set up brand new iPads. And so, but that's not the point, except the fact that I was right and it happens every single time. But I took the old iPads for the kindergartners and I had to wipe them out and set them up for kindergarten. And using Jamf, it was like super easy to do that. I just basically changed the pre-stage enrollment that the DEP dropped them in, the device enrollment program,
yep,
dropped them in the server. And so, and then I sent the command to remote wipe and I turned on my little iPad enrollment SSID. And so I put on my rubber gloves because I was not touching those iPads that those nasty little kindergarten kids touched. And I think there was growing. I opened one of them up. There was literally a bug crawling on it. It was just disgusting. Kids, just little kids are just so gross. But I connected to the wireless. It pulled its new enrollment profile and set them up for first grade and then dropped them in the right group. And they pulled all their apps and configuration profiles and put them back in the cart and sent them on their way.
Cool.
Super easy.
And then there was an update.
And then there was an update. So, but I discovered the update in the process of doing these. And so, but I just put them back in the cart and sent the remote command to all the iPads to do the update overnight or something. So about half of them got it. The other half are probably out of space. So
that sounds about right.
But yeah, so it was,
they should have reserved 7 gig.
Yeah, like Microsoft is going to do, right? So ridiculous. You know, you say that. We've been getting some emails from iStation that we needed to push out a new app to get like some new features or something like that. And like the new app is like version 2.0. 2040 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the old version was like 2.0.2037. I mean, it wasn't a big change at all, but you had to push out this new app. But it tells you in the release notes that you need to have 3 gigs of free space. And I'm like, what? 3 gigs of free space for a,
they
for
just
a
pick
website
a random
wrapper?
Program?
For a website wrapper? I mean, come on.
I think that's what we need to do is quit pushing out the iStation client and just use the website like they do at the house.
I mean, that's all the Chrome app is.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know why, but I guess dealing with the app's a little bit easier. So, but it's just funny that it said it needed 3 gigs. So, I mean, it's right up there with Windows about wanting to reserve some space.
That's hilarious.
But yeah, so just did some stuff with some iPad. I haven't had the opportunity to do that yet to move an iPad or decommission an iPad from Jamf and move it somewhere else or get rid of it. And so I was curious what the process was going to be, and it was relatively easy. So I tried it on one. It worked. So I was like, okay, I'll do the other 34. Not a problem.
Very cool.
No time at all. So and got that done. And so in other App Store news, it looks like Microsoft is fulfilling its promise from WWDC last year about bringing Microsoft Office to the Mac App Store.
Which is cool. Now, I wonder, are they having to share 30% of the revenue for those sold?
Well, I don't think so, because I'm pretty sure the default is 30%, and if they keep it for a year, it drops to 15. That's the subscription or whatever policy. But it's Microsoft, and Netflix just took their subscription billing out of iTunes, and so they're forcing people to go to the web page instead of doing it through your Apple ID. Do you really think Netflix, as big as Netflix was actually paying 30%, or do you think they had been paying 15% all along?
I'm sure they had negotiated something less than that, to be honest. I just wonder if Apple has the audacity to ask for that.
I'm wondering if that's probably the reason why it took so long, was because they were negotiating the fee.
I mean, let's not forget how much of Apple is owned by Microsoft.
Yeah, I mean, it's just crazy that I don't see why they couldn't work on some deals like that that can give people some different subscription fees. But just out of curiosity, do you happen to know like how much Office 365 costs?
If you buy an individual license for a family,
yeah,
$9.99 a month, and that comes with 5 licenses for installs and a terabyte for each person of online storage.
It looks like on the Mac App Store they have it listed probably by annual fee, and so 365 personal, according to the Mac App Store, costs $69.99 a year.
Yeah, and that's what they do if you pay a year in it at a time, they discount to 3 months.
Home costs $99.99, 365 home. And they got something here called 365 solo, which I'm assuming is like just a one-time fee, is $120, which I think sounds about right. So I was just curious if like they were marking it up.
No, it's the same price.
Okay, because I know Spotify got in some trouble for that. They marked up the subscription cost if you build it through iTunes.
Why? I mean, it's their product. Mark it up if you want.
Yeah, well, they were just trying to make up the 30% that Apple was going to take. And Apple got through a hissy fit about that and stopped some Spotify updates for a while because until they fixed that. So, but the solution is to just do what Netflix did and just stop billing through iTunes.
Or just provide developer certificates for everybody. The state does that, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that ridiculous testing site that we have to do these, it's called TPRI testing.
Yep.
And we use an application called Tango from Tango Software, tangocentral.com or something like that. I've seen a tweet about this that I had to basically sideload the application because it's not in the App Store anymore, which there's not really a way to push out an enterprise profile certificate thing to devices using MDM. You'd have to like manually do it. Well, I do restrictions on that so people can't do things like that. And so I had to like open up the plist file to actually find like the URL that the app is actually coming from and set it up in Jamf. It's like an in-house app, and just set the Amazon AW3, the URL to the IPA file that the certificate's actually pushing out. And so I don't have to deal with them having to go in and trust and do this all this other stuff, and it just pushes out. But it's just a nightmare. And so you, in your infinite wisdom, were trying to be funny and was like, well, just use a different platform, meaning use it on Chrome OS. And then it's like, no, have you been to the webpage? It's just as bad.
I'm on there, but you don't have to install it.
It's just as bad. Like, the management part has to do Flash. Like, the whole thing is Flash.
Gag me.
Like, you can't even do anything unless you have Flash enabled for that website.
All right. And nobody should have any Flash-enabled website at this point. There is no excuse.
Yeah, it's just terrible. But, yeah, so that's what I was dealing with is it's just ridiculous that I have to cheat installing an app like that, because I don't even know if it's getting updates or not. I mean, I guess if they push a new IPA to that URL, I'll get a new update to it. But what if they rename the file to something else? I don't know.
Which
don't
I'm
know
sure they will happen. Every time.
Yeah, but they haven't updated it since I did it last year, so we'll see. We'll see. Because I got into their documentation and downloaded and made sure that nothing changed from when I did it last time because some teachers were having trouble logging in. But it's really weird because it's like you have to like set the iPad up, and then if you set up another one, you have to like unset up the first one. It's really, really stupid how it works. And it I don't know. I wish we could find somewhere else that does this testing than Tango, to be completely honest with you. And in fact, it's an iPhone app, an iPod Touch app. It's not even an iPad app at all. So you have
it's
to
old.
You have to like
it's
you have
really
to,
old.
Yeah, it's old. It's old. I'm really surprised it runs. So it must be a 64-bit app because it wouldn't if it was 32. But yeah, so Office 365 is in the Mac App Store, and I actually downloaded it because we have Office 365 here at the school with somehow with our licensing that we have for
school
Microsoft Office. And so I converted my volume license download into just the 365 one just because I just wanted to see what it was like to get all the updates and stuff from the Mac App Store instead of from Microsoft. So we'll see how it goes. I can always uninstall it and go back to the old way if I wanted
to. So I wonder how delayed the Mac ones are going to be.
I don't think it'll be
too delayed.
Because
they have to be approved still.
Well, I mean, they're only coming once a month now anyway. So yeah. They're changing
so
the way they're doing
Office
updates.
I wonder if it's going to be like a patch Thursday instead of a patch Tuesday for it.
Yeah, but or they can just submit it earlier and Apple will go through. But it's also Microsoft, man. Microsoft will be like, hey, can you approve this? Yeah, we'll do it. Yeah. I mean, when you got money, you can get Apple just to do about anything because, you know, they're hard out for cash these days anyway. So
I kind of enjoy that. But
speaking of Office 365, there is a rumor from Boy Genius Report, which I don't know how trustworthy that site is. But it looks like they might be changing Office 365 into Microsoft 365.
Yeah, this has been rumored for a couple of years now. Actually, this rumor started coming around before Windows 10 came out, and they were talking about doing like a subscription service for Windows 10 and calling it Microsoft 365 and including Office with it because everybody thinks Office comes with Windows anyway.
And I think it's a great idea, to be honest.
I think it's great. I mean, I don't have a problem with it. I mean,
I think you should do both, though, because like, what if people want Office but they're running on Mac OS? They don't need the Windows license. So they need to keep Office 365 around anyway.
Oh, I'm sure they will because it doesn't make sense for the business clients that are doing that.
And I think Microsoft 365 is already offered to businesses, I think. Maybe it's because it's actually going to start coming to consumers now as opposed to just businesses. Because I remember we talked about this before.
We probably have.
I vaguely remember it.
Yeah, Microsoft 365 for business and enterprise.
I think it's a great idea.
Hold on,
bundle it all together.
A complete intelligent solution, including Office 365, Windows 10, and enterprise mobility.
Do they give you a price for how much it costs per user?
Let's go to for business, because those are usually the most inflated ones, not the enterprise.
Yeah.
To compare plans.
Just kind of curious to how much it costs.
$5 a user a month for the essentials, which does not include the desktop apps. One that includes the desktop apps is $12.50 per user per month.
So you're talking $3 more than what you're paying for 365?
Yeah, but
to get Windows?
You already have it. I mean, how many people buy a computer without Windows on it?
That's true. I mean, that's really true. Unless you're talking about like what's after Windows 10, you know?
This is true. And maybe that's what it is. Maybe this is for Andromeda.
But why would you want to pay for that now? It's almost like they would need to move to that model of operating system, go back to the way it was before, where you were buying new versions of Windows every 17 years, because that's what it basically seemed like to make Microsoft 365 worth it. Or maybe it's for like business customers to keep their computers and stuff licensed, kind of like volume license or whatever, like we do. Maybe that's sort of like that version of it.
Yeah, it's like the school enrollment for everybody else.
Yeah, so, but it's interesting. And maybe then you could just buy the cheapest desktops you can find with Ubuntu on them and then install, and you can legally install Microsoft on it. So,
well, I mean, those that do that aren't going to pay for Windows anyway. I mean, it's not like not activating stops anything from working.
Yeah, no kidding. I'm pretty sure my image, every time I drop it on a computer, it's not activated, but I can do whatever I want to it, and it's not stopping anything.
Everything
it
does change even, the background.
Well, it hadn't even done that on me yet. All it does is give me some like white text on that says, "Please activate Windows."
Yeah. It won't let you change. It won't let you. Once it goes to that mode, it won't let you change the personalization settings like colors and backgrounds. But
oh well, with Windows 7, it used to make the background black.
Yeah, it doesn't do that now. It just leaves it what it is.
So it doesn't do that. It leaves it what it is, but it just puts the text up. But the text goes away once I join it to the domain. So
well, and then it activates. You can actually remove that text in the registry. It's kind of funny. And leave it not activated.
I'm sure you can. And it's like, well, why can't I change my desktop background? Oh, it's just a group policy.
Don't worry about it.
It's just a group policy.
We're trialing the software.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about some ways to deploy some tools on Microsoft here in a minute. But you put a link in our planning document about Windows Core OS going open source. What's that all about?
Well, I mean...
Or some parts of it, right?
Some parts of it, because, you know, Microsoft is, they have their edition of Windows, the IoT edition, that actually is free. And it is using the same Windows 1 core as Windows 10 and those kind of things, but it runs on a lot of different hardware. And this is just rumors that they're coming about for Windows Core OS, which sounds a lot like an IoT edition or something of that nature to me. But it's been rumored for a while that with Windows 10, they were going to start open sourcing different parts of it because they are a lot more open source friendly. And most of the cost is not the cost of Windows. It's the cost of development and support that they're charging for those customers. So like you and I, let's say you had something down the road. There's some APIs that they're going to allow to function on this and some that they wouldn't. That's what I see. It's a way of them not being completely irrelevant on the embedded space.
That's cool. I mean, because the Core OS, that's like the underlying thing of everything, isn't it? Like Xbox and...
Well, that's Windows One Core. I mean, they got too many stupid names, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, Xbox One actually originally ran Windows 8, and they upgraded it to Windows One Core and Windows 10. Yeah, that was crazy.
And it ran on the soon-to-be-defunct Windows Mobile. It's actually going away now. It is literally dead because Microsoft is sending out emails saying go to iOS or Android. Like, so it please. Is literally dead.
Although I did see a gentleman that managed to get Windows 10 for ARM running on his Lumia 950. The full Windows 10 ARM.
No, I have the 640. No, I was about to say.
No, 950. That was the one that I had that had the dock and everything.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It was a great phone. I don't know how much I'd want it to run full-blown desktop.
So now I have a $25 Windows Mobile phone that is good for nothing now.
And you can put it with your Zune.
Which I do have that too, so I love the Zune. Loved it.
I love the brown one. That one was awesome. Yeah,
but there's some new ways that we've talked about before about Chocolaty as far as a way to deploy software to a Windows machine, kind of like a Linux machine in a way. It's like a package manager, so you can do it all via command line. Well, you've discovered this thing called Scoop, which it's, from what I can see, it's more like developer tools and things like Docker and some other tools like that for development. A way to push those out with a command line as opposed to going through all these individual sites and downloading all these tools. It's just kind of like a one-liner to be able to install whatever you need, like Node or Apache or things like that. Just one-liners, command line.
Which is cool. I mean, but what's really neat about Scoop is with Chocolaty, you had to have admin rights to install anything. With Scoop, it actually uses the current user's home directory as the installation destination, so there is no need to elevate privileges.
That works great for a single user computer.
Yeah, it works great for a single user computer. Now, if you're installing like a 10 gig app and you got 100 users logging into it, oh my goodness, that's crazy. Yeah,
that's true. You know what could? You know what should install that way? The Google file stream should do that. It says it's supposed to, but it doesn't.
It doesn't. It still needs Chrome will actually do it, but
yeah. But if you do Chrome that way, you can't do the group policy stuff with it.
No, and I think that's the whole point of it, though.
You got to use the enterprise version, which is for all users, because by default, that's what Chrome does. You go to Chrome.com or Google.com/Chrome, Chrome.com. Google, I'm pretty sure that probably works, too.
Hey, I'm going to it, so sorry what you hear.
If you go to google.com/chrome and just hit download, you basically get the single user version. That's like their default. So it's pretty neat.
Chrome.com is not wrong.
Oh, well, there you go.
I cannot imagine how much they paid for that.
Yeah, no kidding. But also, speaking of command line spinning up tools, apparently there's a thing called Multipass coming out. That you're going to have the ability to spin up Ubuntu virtual machines. I'm assuming it's using Hyper-V, but you don't have to actually have the Hyper-V stuff like all the way installed to make it work. And it just sort of runs in the background, which is kind of different from the subsystem for Linux, because it's a full-blown version of Ubuntu and not just the subsystem version. So you can basically do everything you can do in a normal Ubuntu virtual machine, just you don't have to see it. I guess you don't have to see any of the Hyper-V stuff or whatever. So
yeah, I imagine it's going to work a lot like the Linux side of things, how the Mac VTAP driver works. So it's actually just a tap on the existing interface, so there's no vSwitch. So
yeah.
I imagine that's what it is. I mean, this is great. I mean, this makes it a little easier. I mean, but those using this really don't care if it's easy or not, let's be honest.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think it's neat. But, you know, I've been thinking about this the other day. Can we really call the Windows subsystem for Linux, Linux? It's not using a Linux kernel.
It's really not, no.
It's not Linux. That's the only part of a Linux system that's Linux. I mean, we'd have to call this the Windows subsystem for GNU. I mean, because it's using the GNU tools. I'm sure Richard Stallman would love that. I mean,
the Windows subsystem for Ubuntu.
I mean, yeah, I was just, I don't know. That's my left field thought for right now. It's like, we can't really call it Linux. It's not running Linux.
Well, I mean, I guess it's like fake Linux in a way, because it gives you like the appearance that you can do like Linux things on it.
Oh, man, we got to call it Winx. Remember a couple long time ago, they had a distribution of Linux called Lindows. So I guess this will be Winx.
Winx. But it's like, because I was looking into it because was running an Apache server at Linode and stuff like that, and I was thinking, well, can I do all that stuff in like the Linux subsystem for Windows? And some stuff it let me do, some stuff it didn't let me do, because I guess running on the Windows kernel and stuff, it kind of cripples some things. I guess it's just for like basic things. And
it doesn't actually have any direct hardware access, so anything that would communicate like that, sockets, it doesn't do. But you can just run Apache in Windows.
Yeah, well, you know how I feel about that.
Well, I mean, you do run a Mac, so I mean.
Well, I know. So there you go. I mean, it's there already, probably, by default. It's probably on by default.
You could probably do brew install.
You know, NFS is on by default in a Mac, and you can't turn it off.
Well, it's because it's part of it. You need it.
You can't turn it off. You can't turn it off.
It's yeah, probably what that's Bonjour neat, is using. Multipass is neat. I know they got that from the Fifth Element movie.
I haven't seen that movie in a long time.
Multipass.
I haven't seen that. That's good. But yeah, so it's just pretty neat how, and like when I was dropping some links in, you commented, it's like, there's a lot of open source stuff on here, a lot of Linux stuff going on. It's like Microsoft is really embracing this open source stuff.
Yeah, they are.
I mean, especially with buying GitHub. And so, I mean, GitHub's like a big part of it, you know, when you think about it. A lot of open source stuff is probably done on GitHub.
A lot of it.
As far as, like, development. So.
And a lot more is done on GitLab now because of that.
Yeah. They'll go back. Once they realize that Microsoft isn't going to ruin it. In fact, they're making it better, like we talked about last time, where they made some paid stuff free. I think people will come back to it.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, it's a fantastic platform.
But let's talk about some hardware before we wrap up today. Looks like Microsoft is going to yet again try to compete with, them directly, but working with vendors and other hardware manufacturers to try to compete better with those cheap Chromebooks. So I'm just kind of curious as how that's going to go, because have you ever ran Windows on one of those eMMC flash chips?
I have. It's gotten a little better, but what kills me, man, y'all have got to come up with a different acronym besides S mode, because what is the first thing you substitute that with?
A word that we can't say if we want to keep our clean tag.
I mean, please, Microsoft, change it. I mean, call it just straight up store mode.
Yeah, and that's fine if that's what they want to do. That's fine. More things are coming to the Windows Store. I think iTunes finally showed up.
Yep, that's actually how I have it installed on my machine, is through the Windows Store.
Office, I think, is there, or will be there soon. Well, I think it's always been there, to be honest with you. And especially since 2019 changed to click to run, there's no reason for it not to be in the store.
No.
So lots more things are, and you can download Ubuntu from the store.
You can download all sorts of Linux. You can download, Backtrack and all those ones for security pen testing, you can download from there now, too.
So, I mean, there's the store is, like, a lot of, I guess we just need, like, iStation and Star app and all those other ones that we need for education to be in this store for actually education to pull this off.
Flash.
So bad. Oh, but it's like, but they can't, it's, you can't use it on that eMMC memory. It's miserable, dude. I mean, it is so bad. It is,
I mean,
so
all
slow.
That is a SD card.
Yeah, and it is like, once you get Windows booted, it runs okay. But like doing updates, turning it on, shutting it down, it's like
it's one of those
things.
You avoid the, did you try turning it off and on again to solve things, because you don't have 30 minutes.
Yeah, it's so miserable. And it's like, they got to do something about that. But, you know, maybe SSD prices will come down a little bit and they can put like the M2 storage in.
Yeah, real SSDs.
Yeah. And so to make those devices a little bit better, because I would love to see some cheap Microsoft or Windows hardware for schools to get. I mean, give Chrome some competition and give Lenovo a reason to start making better keyboards. I mean,
yeah, I saw on here one of them, the two of them that are on there, are, well, three of them are Lenovo's, the 100E, 300E,
no.
And the 14W.
I'm sure the keyboard will fail.
I'm really curious how the 300E stylus support works, though, with this. I'm sure it works a lot better than it does in Chrome, just because Chrome doesn't really care about styluses. Let's be
honest. They don't.
I mean, I think the Keep Notes app works with it, and that's about it.
Yeah, and really, I don't. They'd be handy, but kids are going to lose them. Let's just be honest. They're going to get lost. There's no sense in having a cart full of Chromebooks that need a stylus, because, or any device that really needs a stylus, because kids are going to lose it. Or it's going to get lost.
Microsoft did release another product with this, though. I mean, you know, Apple has their pencil. So Microsoft's got the pen.
The classroom pen.
The classroom pen. It's still a little inflated as far as I'm concerned about what it is. I mean, it's still $40 per, but
so
not $99 at least.
What would that device be for?
I mean, all the Windows Ink functions.
It works with the Surface Pro 3 or newer. So, yeah, I guess it's for, like, its Surface lineup.
Yeah.
If you're looking for a cheaper Surface pen, I guess.
Which, if you've already bought a Surface, you weren't looking for cheaper.
No. So, that's not really going to... That's not going to help anybody. I mean, who's going to...
I mean, it's still
$40.
I mean, it's a...
I mean, the Surface Go, I guess, which is, like, $500. I mean, you can...
And
you can
comes
that,
with eMMC storage.
Oh, it's so bad. It's so bad. And then, yeah, it's interesting. But, yeah. I mean, they need to make better hardware. I mean, it's just spend another $10 and get an actual SSD. I mean, I don't care if it's
only
64
gigs. I'm willing to pay
$20.
You can mark it up 100%.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, it's cheap enough not to, you know? I mean, I get trying to make those price points, but Chromebooks are competing with iPads. All you have to be is under $300. That's all you have to be is under $300.
And all but one of these devices they announced are. I mean, I don't know what Acer was. The TravelMate B1, blah, blah, 114. I mean,
well,
come on, 319. Could you not do in 299?
For real, for just... Don't do anything Acer, really, to begin with. Not a fan of Acer, to be honest with you.
Well, you know they're the same company as, like, Packard Bell and Gateway and all that.
Yeah, they all got bought up.
Yeah, Acer bought them all because, well, apparently Acer thinks buying worse companies will make you better.
Well, I mean, when Dell came in with their new model, it put a lot of people in hurt. And so all those companies, I mean, look at how much trouble Hewlett-Packard is still having. I mean, to this day, they don't know what they want to do. They spun off their enterprise business from their other business just because the other business was doing so bad.
Well, they have some great enterprise stuff. I mean, ProLine
servers
are wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, they got the Aruba stuff. That's real great.
No, I still don't acknowledge that.
but yeah, so, I mean, Dell's model of just customizing and building... that changed the game for PC. And so, yeah, you don't see Packard Bills and HP bought Compaq and then all those other brands that used to be around.
The 90s of computers.
Yeah, Polaroid probably even made a computer at one point. So, yeah, but in another hardware news, it looks like HP is releasing its new, has released its newest line of education Chromebooks.
Yes.
Haven't actually, they look nice. I mean,
they got AMD chips in some of them.
Yeah, and so I don't have a problem with HP. Their stuff isn't too bad.
No, in fact, some of the best Chromebooks that I've ran across have been made by HP. It's just they always cost just a little bit more.
Yeah,
but they were built really well.
The same with the Dells too. The Dells are really built are built really nice, but they always cost a little bit more too. Sometimes like $100 more. But,
yeah,
but you know, it's like
it might be worth it.
I mean, I buy this Lenovo Chromebook, or we bought those N22s, N21s. We spent $200 on them.
Yeah, and then $135 is what I spent on the 22s.
Then we spend another $50 replacing keyboards and backplates because the hinges and the keyboards break. Yeah, so I mean, why not just spend the $250 to $300 range and get the better Chromebooks, you know?
I'm starting to lean that way on the Chromebooks at least because the cheap ones aren't really cheap.
Quality over quantity? Is that what we're talking about now?
Because I don't want Apple to enter this discussion anywhere.
Well, no, I'm talking about Chromebook wise. No, we had that talk yesterday of how I like Apple hardware better.
I know, and they build good hardware. But yeah, I'm really starting to lean towards the HP and the Dells as far as Chromebooks. I'm a huge Lenovo fan as far as a ThinkPad line, but their cheap Chromebooks have been too cheap.
I mean, it's like if you buy a cart of 30 of them and you got 10 of them sitting on the shelf because they're broken, what good is it? I mean,
yeah, might as well spent more and got 20.
Yeah, I mean.
But no, I am excited about these AMD-powered Chromebooks because the AMD chips that they're putting in there, yeah, they're the older AMD chips, but they're still better than those Celerons they've been putting in there. And the Intel stuff, Intel's about to have a pretty big shortage on chips because they've had to spin down some of their fabrication facilities to spin up other fabs. And yeah, their prices are going to go up for the Intel stuff for a little bit.
Well, that just seems to be like a normal thing, I guess, when it comes to Intel. They always seem to go through the cycles where there's like shortages of things and prices go up. Same with like hard drives and SSDs too. That's sort of weird. And
yeah, I think that one was fixed. SD RAM. Oh my goodness. I mean, if you look at the generally the price of technology goes down. If you look at the price of DDR4 memory last year and the year before, last year it was over 100% more than it cost the year before.
Yeah, it's just crazy.
Thank you, Samsung.
So let's round out this conversation talking a little bit about Google. First off, I would just want to say that kind of breaks my heart to say this, but it looks like Hangouts is going away in October of 2019. They're starting with us as far as like schools and businesses and stuff. That's the thing that's going away now. And then who knows what's going to happen to when like my personal Google Hangouts account. I don't know when that's going to go away. Or if it's even going to go away at all, who knows? Because I really like how my Google Voice integration is with that. It's like you call my Google Voice number, the Hangouts app brings my phone, and I can make a phone call through the Hangouts app. I really like that. I'm going to miss it. But yeah, a little sad about that. I mean, we've used Google Talk forever. And
yes, since when it was XMPP and you could talk to it on anything. It was great.
Yeah, but it's going away, and they're pushing the G Suite customers to Hangouts Meet and Chat, I think, is the other one,
mm-hmm.
Which I don't know why they just don't combine those two products into one.
Oh, but then we would have Hangouts again. I mean, we can't do that.
Yeah, but it's basically the Slack competitor, which is going to be great, but how do you do, how can I set up, how can I Google Chat you or Hangouts Chat you outside the organization? That ain't in place yet, I don't think.
It's probably going to be the same way they do with the other apps. Or are you going to allow outside communication or not?
Yeah, so
and that may be why they did it. So it defaults to this way. It defaults safe first.
Yeah, which I mean, to be honest, the way Slack and Discord and Hangout, well, maybe not so much Discord. Discord is pretty easy to get people into,
but it's
outside.
Still a silo.
Yeah, but maybe like Hangouts and Slack. Maybe it's designed for just inter-office communication and not so much for outside office communication.
Yeah.
And that's what I want to replace email is something like this. It's like, why can't everything just go through one service like that?
And they could. The technologies are there. They've been there for a long time, but people are so... It's kind of like, why do I still have a desk phone? I mean, it's the same problem. The replacements for that have been here forever, but nobody wants to adopt a new model.
Everybody's married to the old ways, you know. We want to have something ring. I hate when my phone rings. I just rather not answer it. I'd rather just deal with over text. It's like, send me a message. It's like, sometimes I can communicate better. I mean, y'all have listened to this podcast for 60 episodes now. I stumble sometimes on words. I don't communicate very well.
And that's just what he doesn't edit out, guys.
Yeah, I mean, just imagine what it's really like. But yeah, so if you're into this sort of thing, just pour one out for Hangouts. I mean,
I know. Here's to you, Hangouts.
Here's to you as we drink some coffee, and I've got an Ozarka water bottle.
So. There you go.
And the last bit of Google Chrome news, which really, really breaks my heart, which. I think there might be some like underhanded dealings for this.
Google
by default is an ad company. Let's just be honest. Yes. They sell ads, and that's what they do.
They sell ads about you.
And so there are some great plugins out there, some great extensions, AdBlock Plus, uBlock, lots of things. KuBlock, I mean, I think is one. That they block ads. They help make the web cleaner, faster, use less bandwidth, less annoying. I'm not saying get rid of ads completely. There are nice ways to do ads that aren't intrusive. No more punch the monkey. None of that stuff.
And for crying out loud, please never make an ad that moves text that I'm trying to read.
Yeah, that's just ridiculous.
Or moves a link that I have to click.
So we have these extensions that block those things. And the way these extensions work is they have to make connections to remote servers to be able to keep like block list up to date and to check block list to see if some, like a page loads. And it, while the page is loading, it checks against this remote website to see what needs to be blocked, and it blocks it. It looks like Google is going to disallow the ability to connect to remote servers and extensions. And in the process of this, they only limit how many filters you can put in an extension. So, like, the article that I'm going to link to says uBlock uses, like, 900,000 filters to work great, to work function. And then, like, Google's only going to allow, like, 10,000, like, in the extension itself. And so it's going to be interesting to see how this is going to affect the AdBlock business. When it comes to using Google Chrome, it's just a little shady in a way, because it's like, I get them wanting to change the way they do extensions. Everybody's done it. Edge did it. Safari just recently changed the way that they do extensions. So sure, why not? Google's going to change the way they do extensions, but it's just kind of like the thing that it's really going to break is ad blockers. And considering that Google is an ad company, it just seems a little shady in some ways that they're actually doing this.
Yeah, there's another interesting angle on this. You know, Mozilla, with their recent browsers, have moved their extension architecture to be compatible with Chrome's. So, by default, Mozilla is going to lose functionality because these people aren't going to want to rewrite for two of them.
Yeah.
It's just not right.
Yeah, so, and isn't Edge about to start using Chrome extensions too? Didn't we talk about that?
Yes, Edge is moving to Blink. So, I mean, it's going to be Chromium.
Chrome's breaking everything. So, yeah. But, I mean, it's theirs. It's their prerogative to do whatever they want.
They can do what they want with it. I mean, we should all behave and use other things if we don't want monopolies to do things like this.
So, I mean, I think if you really want to... Firefox, I think, has ad blockers built into it by default now. So
yep, and Falcon does as well if you want a really alternative browser.
And the Firefox one is actually really good. They actually have an app called Focus on the iOS that actually brings their Firefox ad blocking tools over to Safari, and it actually works pretty well.
And Focus is one of those browsers where it keeps absolutely no history either.
So, I mean... So if you're in Mozilla, has gotten a lot better as far as like memory management. So it's not as bad as what it used to be.
No, it seems like it's relatively good now.
It seems like Chrome's like the big kid on campus now, and so he's going to be the bully and start changing the way he's doing things to make everybody else's life miserable. And I just don't know how I feel about that, to be honest.
I don't either. I don't like it when companies misbehave just because they can.
I mean, aren't there like laws in place to stop these things from happening?
How can you really claim Google's a monopoly? I mean, there's a ton of other things you could use.
I know. You're right. There's a whole lot of other browsers, but do all those browsers have extensions that all these other companies support and make extensions for?
No,
I mean, AdBlock Plus is probably everywhere. I mean, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, that's everywhere.
but yeah, so it's just interesting considering that the thing that's really going to break is ad blockers, and it's Google's an ad company, so it's sad. But now as G Suite enterprise customers or whatever, they're quote unquote not selling ads based on our data. So
I don't care. Sell the ads based on my data. If I'm using your product, I just don't want to see the ads. That's my deal with it.
Yeah. I just don't want to see ads. So yeah, especially because you got some crazy ads the other day. It was just weird.
It was. And I don't know how in the world I landed in that demographic. Whew.
But it's like, I heard something else about that too. Somebody was like, it's that whole story. They were talking to somebody about something, and all of a sudden on Facebook, they're seeing ads for that thing or something similar to what they were talking about. And so it's just, everything's listening and it's just creepy.
It is.
So that's the reason why there's no Alexa device in my house. So.
Yes, there's no Alexa. But you do have Siri. She's doing the same thing.
Yeah, but she's
heck, she opens your garage for you now. It will.
Well, I unplugged that because now she's giving me false alarms. She's telling me that my garage is opening and it's not really opening. So.
Maybe she just misses you and wants you to come home and visit.
I don't know. She tells me, hey, there's an obstruction detected. Your garage door is opening. And so I'm like, okay. Well, I leave work and I go home. And the garage door is closed. I'm like, what the heck is going on? I don't know if I got like something wrong with my sensors down by the garage door or things just going nuts. So I just unplugged it for the time being. I didn't spend too much money on it. It wasn't like one of those fancy Chamberlain ones that cost like $150 or whatever. So it only cost me like $40. So I'm not worried about the money. I'd like it to work. It was handy. It was becoming a pain.
Well, send it back. Get your refund.
Well, I think it's probably a little bit too late now for that. So,
hey, I'm sending back that 2060 I ordered.
So, yeah. But that's our show for this week. For links and show notes for this episode, visit educatingtech.net/60. We're at episode 60 now. You can send us any questions, comments, or concerns to educatingtech@gmail.com, or you can reach out to us on Twitter using @educatingtech. Don't forget to tweet at us using #AskEducatingTech if you want us to answer any questions for you on the show. To see what Chris is up to, you can find him on Twitter with @Feeks, and I am @TwistOfMatt. Except, you may not find out what we're doing on there because I think subconsciously, I don't know how we did it, we both decided to try to use Twitter less than what we were doing before. And you weren't even using it that much.
But I say, I don't know how I could use it less than I already do. I mean, I use it mainly just to complain here of lately.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of my thing too. Or it's like, hey, this might be fun to share. But it's just, I even switched from using the official Twitter app back to Tweetbot because I don't get notifications on anything anymore because the APIs are dead. So, and it's just kind of nice. Hey, so-and-so liked my tweet. Well, that's great, but I don't need to be notified about that. And yes, before you at me about I can turn off those notifications, Tweetbot also does have some things in it that I like too that the official Twitter app doesn't provide. So it's kind of the best of both worlds for me on that. So, but also if you like what we're doing, you can support us by going to patreon.com/educatingtech. And if you don't mind, what are you pointing at me for?
Why
are you
because starting? I was going to do the iTunes thing if you didn't.
Oh, okay. Yeah. We're always going to do it. It's in the script, man. It's in the script.
Oh, okay. I don't see the script.
The one thing I use a script for, it's in there. So, and if you don't mind, leave us a rating and or review review in iTunes to help us grow our audience. And remember, if you leave a 5-star review, we'll read whatever you put in the review as long as it's clean. Recipes, poems, love notes, whatever you want us to do. Just keep it clean. Remember, we're an education show, so that means children may be listening and families. And, you know, speaking of kids, at your old school, there was this kid that apparently likes Apple just as much as I do.
Oh, yeah.
And he reached out to me, and I helped him with
his privacy. Hey, we'll say, yeah, Ty, you're awesome.
Yeah, he reached out to me asking me, like, where I got my privacy policy for my stickers app that we have on the App Store. I said, well, I stole it from somewhere. And so he was like, well, can I just use yours? I was like, well, yeah. And so, but he also, so not only did he make a sticker pack for your old school, which actually came out really cool. He's got some pretty cool stickers in there. But he also made, like, this flashcard app for, like, doing sight words.
Yeah.
And, dude, it's awesome.
Yeah, it's he actually wrote that for his mother's class. She's a kindergarten teacher there.
And, like, it's probably the one of the best, like, sight word flashcard apps I've seen. It's simple. It's free. There's no ads. I mean, it gives you the ability to add words, edit words. And then it has the, okay, I just want to go back to default. And he's got a restore default words function and gets rid of everything that you added and puts it back to the way he had it. It's amazing. It's a great app. And so,
well, you need to put a link in the show notes for that one because
I will.
It really is. I mean, Ty, he's a cool kid. He does the even if he is an Apple fanboy, I've tried to get him not to be, but he's just going to be. So I guess that's why he contacted you.
Well, yeah, probably.
but so no, he's awesome. You should go download his app and give it a try.
Yeah, I mean, even if you don't have kids or need flashcards with sight words, but hey, give it a shot. I mean, check it out. I mean, just support the kid. It's pretty good. Get him some good download numbers. In fact, he got 500 VPP purchases from me.
There you go.
And I pushed it out to all of my iPads from pre-K on up to first grade because I think that's what he said it was good for in the in his release notes or whatever. It was good for like first grade. And so it was really good. I actually might even put it on the devices we have at the house to work with. We're starting with our four-year-old, working with him on sight words and getting him to start learning how to read. So I might. That's probably a good idea for me to get that for him. So, but yeah, it's a really great app. It's clean. It's minimal. It looks pretty. Functions super easy. Really easy to use. So yeah, I'll put a link in the show notes for that. So good job, Ty. Thanks for your work and reaching out. And anything else we can do to help you, let us know. But that's it for our show this week. So we'll see you later, Chris.
See you later, Matt.